So she's still making cheese, but not there. But anyway, so I'm visiting this cheesemaker. This is kind of early in my cheese career, if you will, where I was, I was a little nervous. You go to someone's farm, you're kind of, intruding in some sense on their, their life and their home and so on. So, didn't quite know what to expect. So I get there, it's kind of a really blustery day. Of course, she lives on the coast, so it was always kind of blustery there. A little bit misty, foggy, kind of a weird, mysterious ambiance on the farm. And so I get there, and she's showing me around. She has a bunch of, I believe they were Nubian goats, so they're the really cute goats with the long ears. They're making those cute little goat noises, and it was just kind of, very pastoral. But she starts to tell me the story about how, just the other day we had this whole big problem. We have this bear that kind of hangs out around our farm. And it wasn't after actually the goats. I mean, you might think, mountain lions or bobcats or whatever, they're after the animals. But the bear was actually after the cheese. So she had a cheese room, a little shed that she made cheese in. And she said that she would, when you make fresh chèvre, you separate the curds and the whey. You often will hang the chèvre in a bag, the fresh cheese in a bag, and you let the whey drain off. So you'll hang it up. She would hang it up in kind of, she had a big long sink. She would hang it up and, maybe 6, 8, 10 hours or overnight or something. And so the bear evidently would smell that. And he would kind of lurk around the cheese room when she did this. And apparently there was a window in the cheese room. So apparently he would try to break in the window. There'd be paw marks and so on. And so it was sort of like this constant battle that she would have with this bear to like try to keep it out, make cheese, but not, try not to worry about it too much, just sort of hoping that this whole little dance was going to work out and everybody was going to be okay. And apparently, the bear was pretty stubborn and pretty persistent in its urge to try to find this cheese, because of course it smelled really good, probably compared to what it was used to eating, like berries and random plants or something, the occasional salmon. So at one point, apparently it actually stepped up its efforts to try to get into this cheese room. So it broke into her little. There was kind of a foyer in between when you go in the door to the cheese room. There's a little area where you change your shoes and everything when go into the cheese room. So there was a little pre-area there. And apparently the bear got in there, a little kind of office-y area. The bear actually got in there, and I think the door must have had a spring on it or something, because the door closed behind it, apparently. And so the bear panicked. The bear was trying to get at the cheese, but then the bear was locked in, and it freaked out, and it just ripped up their whole little area, office area, threw papers around. There are big holes in the walls. I have a great picture actually of a paw slash mark with paw mark on the wall. Just kind of ripped it apart, and so they didn't really know what to do. I think she said that what they did is they kind of ran out there and kind of opened the door and ran back, and hoped that it would come out. And eventually, I guess it did. So they were going to have to sort of totally rebuild this area, this part of their cheese room, because the bear had destroyed it. So we're just standing there talking. She's showing me her cheeses. She had a whole bunch of cheeses. She liked to put in all kinds of flavoring. So she did cocoa and herbs and berries and all kinds of stuff. So she was pretty creative that way. So she's talking about this, and I'm nodding and everything. And all of a sudden, she kind of steps back and she looks out the window, and there's the bear. And I had never seen a bear before, so that was pretty exciting. But because she kind of stepped back, it made me really nervous. And I'm like, oh God, the bear was not going to come for us, of course. And we were inside and it was outside, but it was kind of unnerving to see her kind of like, kind of step back and get a little tense. And she started talking really quietly. And so I kind of froze up, and it actually just kind of walked around and, like lumbered around like a bear, lumbers around, and looked around a little bit and then walked back into the forest. Her farm was right on the edge kind of a forested area. So the bear probably just hung out in the forest and came up to the farm every once in a while to check out and see if cheese was being made. So the bear came out, the bear left, it was all good. But I like to think that the moral of that story is that bears are kind of known for honey, but really they're after cheese. That's what they want.
877-500-5266. 877-500-5266. Once again, 877-500-5266. Last time, 877-500-5266.
That number is the number that you call to support KBOO Community Radio. That was Peter Yarrow from Peter, Paul, and Mary, who was in the studio the other day singing the membership drive number. If you can give $5 a month or $10 a month, that all adds up to KBOO's annual budget. The way that community radio works is a lot different from commercial radio, which takes money from advertisers that then supplies them the vast majority of their funding. KBOO is actually funded by we, the listeners. So if you can give $10 a month or I think I'm up to about $15 a month now, and I know that a lot of people are giving an hour's wage a month. Whatever you're able to give, do a monthly deduction from your checking account and help us reach our goal. We're in the last day of our membership drive. You've been putting it off, so now is your chance to give. 877-500-5266.
You know, some folks just procrastinate. Others deliberately wait till the last minute so they can be the hero. It's hero time, folks. Put on your cape and swoop on down.
Hero.
You're done.
KBOO needs a hero.
You're done, right? Okay. Put on your cape.
What I was
put
hoping.
On your cowl. Do whatever you got to do and run on down, fly on down, take the bus on down to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue and plunk down your heroic pile of cash, your heroic bank draft, or call 877. Yeah, the song said that was the last time, but I'm going to say it anyway. 500-5266. Use the website KBOO.FM, and then when you're done making your fully tax deductible 501c3 type charitable contribution, well, that's how the IRS defines it, but it's not really charity. You are investing. You are buying a piece of KBOO and investing in your community, in community supported radio. And community means that we all take responsibility to maintain something that from which we all benefit. Get that book, Soup Night by Maggie Stuckey, when you put down $60 or more for the year, $5 a month, $10 a month, $30 a month. What matters really is that you are getting involved. So do it right now. 877-500-5266.
KBOO needs a hero, and that hero can be you.
Hi, welcome back to the food show. So next up, we have an interview with Arun Gupta. So he's actually, like me, you keep gesturing at the mic, I think my level's fine. So he's actually... Yeah, he's also a chemical engineer turned journalist like me. I found this out, but he also graduated from culinary school, as he'll say at the beginning of his interview. He told me about his road trip, in which he wrote about for Yes Magazine. He actually had a lot more to say, and I posted it on the website, so you can check that out on kboo.fm while you're maybe donating some money to our station to keep us on air. So without further ado, Arun Gupta.
Last summer, I traveled across the U.S. I've been doing a number of road trips in the last few years. First, my partner, Michelle, and I were covering the Occupy movement, and then we started doing a lot of labor reporting. We covered the election. We've made seven trips across the country since 2011. And the most recent trip, which I did in August, I was visiting farmers markets. And I've been to a lot of farmers markets across the country. And I would also stay with friends and cook for them. I'd go to farmers market, select food. So it was a real opportunity to kind of see what is out there, the bounty, what people are producing, regional delicacies. And products, and you know, it's wonderful to see really the tremendous growth in farmers markets that has gone on in the last 20 years. I think there's something like 8,000 farmers markets across the country. It accounts for a rather small percentage of what we eat. If you added up basically all local food that consumers buy from farmers farmers markets and supermarkets, you know, places like Whole Foods, New Seasons, I think it amounts only to something like $2.7 billion. To put that in perspective, we as a nation spend about $1.5 trillion. So you're talking about 1/5 of 1% is on local. Now, a lot of local food is also business to business. So that's what really kind of kicks up the percentages. And in fact, it's probably over $10 billion. So maybe about 1% of our food dollar, 1 cent on every food dollar, goes toward local foods. But and in fact, Portland is a pioneer. The road trip was designed such that I would end up in Portland because even though, you know, I cook professionally in New York City, during our trips over the last few years, we've been in 50 U.S. cities, virtually every major U.S. city. And I came to the conclusion that Portland has the best food of any city in the country. Not necessarily restaurants. You know, New York's got a great restaurant scene, obviously. L.A., the Bay Area, Chicago, you know, Portland's a much smaller city, it's not as international, but it's just the quality and availability of products here, agricultural products, that is really incredible.
What do you think contributes to Portland's ability to produce these quality agricultural products?
Well, I think there are a number of factors. You know, one is certainly the geography and ecology. James Beard, who's considered the father of American cuisine, was from Oregon. And when I was in culinary school in the late 90s, I've read some of his works. And, he just wax rhapsodic about growing up in Oregon and just the things that are available. And that's really one of the things I've discovered having spent some time here in the last couple of years is just the great variety of products, you know, the types of mushrooms, the shellfish, the vegetables. And of course, in the last, like, you know, 20, 30 years, there's been also a cultural shift in terms of the development in the food scene, you know, the wine industry, the whole Willamette Valley agricultural region. And so I think a lot of it now has to do with a kind of culture. But I think there's also in Portland, there's more of economic self-sufficiency or self-production out of necessity. I've spent over 20 years in New York, and Brooklyn has become kind of this the hub of kind of like hipster culture and artisanal food culture. But it's a joke, you know, in a lot of ways. There's, believe it or not, there's a store in Brooklyn that sells artisanal mayonnaise, which is absolutely ridiculous. It sounds like something that should be on Portlandia. It's you know, I mean, like, I make homemade mayonnaise all the time. It takes a couple of minutes, and yet they're selling these flavored mayonnaises, 4-ounce jars for $7. It's absolutely absurd. But in Brooklyn, a lot of this kind of artisanal production or self-production is done, I think, much more as a fashion and a fad, where my impression in Portland is a lot of people more were doing it out of necessity, you know, or just to save money, you know, or because you have a lot more space and you could. It's wonderful to walk around the city and you see, you know, people's yards. It's not like, you know, these neatly manicured lawns. Often they have vegetable gardens instead. So I think very much there's this kind of cultural, economic and geographic base. Like one of the real advantages of Portland, I think, is it's a big enough city such that you have a lot of food coming into it, but it's at the same time it's small enough that it's very accessible. So in New York City, you can get anything you want, mm-hmm. But it means, like, okay, you have to go out to like Bay Ridge in South Brooklyn for some ingredient, or then you have to go to North Queen, which will literally take you a couple hours from South Brooklyn, for some other ingredients, or you may have to go to the Bronx. So you can get all the stuff in New York potentially, but can you access it? No. That's a difference I found with Portland. And when I came to the PSU Farmers Market for the first time, it was just like, this is is amazing. I've looked at lists of the top 10 farmers markets in the country, and I've been to most of them. Union Square in New York City, the one in Chicago, the Ballard Street Market in Seattle, the one in San Francisco, you know, and it's just like PSU blew them all away. What I found as a chef was great is that there wasn't just like, say, one person selling mushrooms or one person selling seafood. There'd be like three or four different places. So I could actually compare and see like who has the best product. And the fact that there are so many producers is really, I think, it speaks to how much of a food culture, a great kind of self-production there is in the Portland region.
Once again, that was Arun Gupta. I took about 48 minutes of audio with that interview, and once you can find all of that on KBOO.fm. He's a big proponent of fresh food because he thinks that we need the nutrients in it that processed food isn't giving us. You can find out all about that and more on KBOO.fm and even give us a little bit of money so we can stay on the air. But our pitchers will tell you a little more about that.
Thanks, Peter. And thanks, Arun, for talking about local food and one of the many things that you hear on KBOO Community Radio. This is the last day of our winter membership drive, and we are asking for your support to keep this radio station going. So the number to call to support KBOO right now is 877-500-5266. If you just found us, welcome. And now time to join the radio station, show your support, whatever you're able to give, whether it's a $5 a month contribution, $10 a month contribution, or one-time contribution of $60 or $100. The basic membership is $40. Low-income membership is $20. And maybe somebody out there can give a $500 gift. That sounds like a lot, but it's less than $10 a week. I mean, isn't it worth it to pay $10 a week for hard-hitting, factual, independent news and public affairs that you hear at KBOO Community Radio? 877-500-5266. We are live here in the studios. We're real people. Come down and see us, 20 Southeast 8th. My name is Janka. I'm here with Sam.
Hi, Janka.
Hi, and we are in the studios waiting for you to stop by, and as Sam said earlier, be a hero. 877-500-5266 if you want to call. 20 Southeast 8th Avenue if you want to stop by.
And you can do either or both. You can call and say that you will come down to make good on your promise. We're asking you to call and promise to give KBOO some money, and then you fulfill that promise. You can do both. Call 877-500-5266 and tell my friends Aisha or Tomas, whoever takes your call, at 877-500. Write it down. 5266, the amount of your radio bill and how you wish to pay it. This is a service on which you rely, without which you cannot do. And that is something worth supporting. That is something worth paying for. You know, we don't send you a bill. We rely on you to come to us and tell us the amount of your bill, and then you tell us how you want to pay it, whether it's in monthly installments, whether it's all at once, or any sort of thing. We will work with you because that's what KBOO is about. KBOO is here for you, and that's because you are here for the KBOO. That's how it works. We're interdependent. So come close the circle. 877-500-5266. Janka, you were calling out to the new listeners earlier. You know, there's some science that tells us that people need to hear it over and over and over again over the course of years before they finally step up. And I know that our audience, we attract the sort of people who are not the usual. You are different. You are unique, just like KBOO. And that's why you are going to defy the odds and be someone who steps up right away. You just found us this morning, and right now, this morning, you're going to call 877-500-5266. You might even use our website, kboo.fm. We heard the host talking about how the full interview with Arun Gupta is right there on the website. And so why not use the website to make your donation, and then navigate around. See what's there. See what you missed from last week. It's still available to you, because that's the commitment that KBOO has to the community. And we're calling out to the community right now to make a commitment to KBOO. 877-500-5266.
You know, KBOO is local right here in your community. We mentioned that we're just off of Burnside at 8th and Burnside Southeast. And all of the programmers that you hear on the air are volunteers from right here in your community. 20 out of 24 hours a day are produced right here locally in our studios in Portland.
You know, the people in your neighborhood?
It's a big difference between us and the station just to the right of us, where less than 2 hours a day are produced locally. We are a station that's committed to the community right here in the Portland area. We reach out Hood River, Salem, and we do reach up to Astoria if you've got a good antenna. So if you're out in one of those outlying areas, KBOO provides a lifeline to you to some of the news and information and music that you're not getting elsewhere. Then show your support right now. 877-500-5266.
Wait, Jake, I couldn't get that written down. Can you repeat that?
Well, you know, if you need to remember the number, say you're driving or something, mm-hmm. just remember this. 877-500-5266. KBOO. So when you can pull out your phone and you get a minute, that's the number to remember. 877-500-KBOO. Maggie Stuckey, the guest who's about to be on, just came in here and greeted us and brought us a bunch of tulips and said thank you for everything that we do. And if you support what KBOO does and love the fact that we're local, we're here in your community, and we're here for you since 1968, then do show your support. Whether you can do a $75 contribution and break that up into $6.25 a month and pick up the flash drive as a thank you, whether you could do a $5 a month contribution, $60, and get a KBOO t-shirt as a reward, 877-500-5266.
Or Maggie's book.
Yes, you can get that $60 contribution. You can get Maggie's book, which we're about to hear about.
Yes.
877-500-5266. Support KBOO right now.
And you are tuned to The Food Show on KBOO. And we have a live in the studio guest who is a local woman. Maggie Stuckey is a Portland-based author. She has written a book called Soup Night, Recipes for Creating Community Around a Pot of Soup. And welcome to KBOO, Maggie.
Thank you. It's delightful to be with you.
That's great. Tell us about Soup Night.
Well, if you pick it up, it's hard to imagine on radio, but use your imagination. You pick it up and you flip through it and you see recipes and you see pictures of food, and your brain says, okay, I know what this is. This is a cookbook. And it is, but it is so much more than that. It is also, one reviewer described it this way, it is a manual for developing community disguised as a cookbook. I love that.
It is a manual for developing community disguised as a cookbook.
Yeah.
And some of the recipes in here are contributed by people from all over.
The book is filled with stories about neighborhoods and organizations around the country that hold some type of regular get-together built around soup. Generally, it's a neighborhood, although there are some, I found some organizations, some church groups, some nonprofits that do a fundraiser built around soup, which can be a lot of fun. And they all established their get-together with the same goal. This is absolutely fascinating to me. They all wanted the same thing. They wanted to live in a neighborhood where people knew each other. And they all came up with the exact same way to do it, independent of each other, which is, it goes like this. Let's make a giant pot of soup, invite everybody, and see what happens. And, of course, what happens is everybody loves it, and so they keep doing it, and pretty soon it becomes a tradition. Some of the groups have been getting together for more than 20 years. Their children have been born and grown up and come back and maybe start a soup night in their own new neighborhood. And so I invited people who participate in these soup groups to share, if they wanted to share some of their favorite soup recipes. Well, don't you know, they sent me their very best recipes.
Of course.
So, and because the groups are all across the country, the recipes reflect local cuisines, local ingredients, local ways of doing things. So we have pozole from Arizona, and we have chowder from Boston, and we have gumbo from Louisiana, and lots of other kind of regional specialties that make the book more fun.
Do you have a favorite recipe?
You know, it's kind of like asking a parent which is their favorite child.
Yeah, it depends on which day.
But in fact, I do. There's one I keep coming back to because, A, it's very, very delicious. It's very healthy. And you almost always have the ingredients on hand. And that is called African peanut soup. It uses, I use canned tomatoes, canned diced tomatoes, which I always have on hand because I use them all the time. You can make either a vegetarian version or a chicken version, and I usually do chicken because I love chicken. So it uses diced tomatoes, chicken stock, rice, and diced chicken, if you want to add that, plus two spices, curry and red pepper flakes. So it has little spicy undertones, and a big spoonful of peanut butter, which is what makes it African and also adds a lot of nutrition. And when I say that the soup has peanut butter, sometimes people, their mind goes to peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. It's not like that at all. The peanut butter just makes it, gives it that kind of salty, slightly sweet saltiness, and it just adds a level of flavor that's rich and delicious, and you can't quite put your finger on what it is until I say it's peanut butter, and people say, oh, now I get it.
And then that reminds me of some of the issues that might come up in a group dinner like this, which would be an allergies for one, but there's also food preferences.
Food preferences. It's very easy to handle that. I don't want people to hold back from trying to organize a soup night because of that kind of worry. A lot of people, the most common thing that I encountered in all these interviews is that the host makes two soups, one vegetarian and one meat. And sometimes it's just one vegetarian and then a lot of side dishes, bowls and stuff that people can add what they want to. So if somebody has a problem with dairy, it's not in there, but there's a bowl of sour cream if you want to add a little bit, or a bowl of cheese if you want to sprinkle a little bit on. Or maybe they've fried up some bacon and there's bacon bits you can add into your soup. It's very easy to actually manage the allergy part of it. It's easy to do.
So I'm wondering, why have all these groups, why have they locked in on soup? You know, why not a community sandwich bar night or these sort of other ways to get together and share meals?
Any of those would work. Soup adds an extra dimension. Well, we all know that if you get a bunch of people sitting around a table sharing a meal together, good stuff is going to come out of that. So it could be anything. But when it's soup, it seems to me that the soup itself adds another component, which is that it's the ultimate comfort food. I mean, we all know when we were sick and mother brought you up a bowl of chicken noodle soup, even if it was straight out of a can, you instantly felt better. Soup makes you feel better. It's warm. It's nourishing. It's simple and homely. It's not fancy. It's easy for the person who's hosting the party because in almost all cases, it can be made ahead of time, and you just leave it on the stove. You don't have to fuss with it when people are there. So for all of those reasons, it's easy, it's nutritious, it's a very inexpensive way to feed a lot of people, a very healthy way to feed a lot of people. Plus, there's this quality that soup has that I think is the magic of soup. Is it just, you put your hands around the bowl and your hands warm and you take a sip and your tummy gets warm and your soul gets warm. It's just, you can't beat soup for making people feel together with each other.
Sort of a healing property.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, heals every, top to bottom, it'll heal you.
And in your book, you describe the healing properties that soup night has on communities. And I was wondering, how welcoming were these soup nights into like letting you write about them, letting you study?
To the 100%, 150%. They all, first of all, they're all so proud of what they've accomplished. I mean, they set out with this sort of generalized goal of let's get the neighbors to know each other. And then what came out of it is this very strong sense of community, of being together and helping each other out and taking care of each other and watching out for the kids and making sure everybody's safe and everybody's healthy and everybody gets help when they need it. A lot of people described it as our neighborhood in the middle of a big city is like a little small town all by itself. So the process of having that happen, it's taken a lot of people by surprise. Some of these people are surprised that they've been getting together for 25 years. And they say, we wouldn't miss it for the world. If somebody invites us to do something and it happens to be soup night, we say, sorry, that's soup night, and we never miss it. So they love talking about it because they're so proud. They're like evangelists, you know. They want to pass the word on to other people. And they were absolutely thrilled that I had found them and that I interviewed them and I wanted to include them in the book and include some of their recipes and some of the stories. And the stories are so touching and so charming. That's my
favorite
part.
Tell us a touching, charming story.
Well, the one soup night that is that runs through the whole book is actually here in Portland. It's the one that started me thinking about this. And one evening I was a guest there, and one of the neighbors who's elderly started thinking about the big cycle. And he held up his hand like this, and he would touch his finger, and he'd say, well, first we had, and then he named several people, and then they came in when they were young, and then they started having kids, and he's going, you know, counting it off on his fingers on his hand. Then they started having kids, and then those kids grew up, and then they had kids of their own. And so we see this little kid who we used to buy lemonade from her, and now she's learning to drive, and pretty soon she'll be off to college, and then maybe she'll be back with kids of her own. That whole lovely cycle, it's so delightful. Particularly, I was touched by how much it means to the children and how much it means to the parents that the children are growing up in this kind of a setting where they know everybody and they feel supported and loved and taken care of by everybody. In fact, that was the original impetus for starting this one group. When one of the moms, when her kids were toddlers, said, I want them to be able to go out our front door and play in the front yard and not be afraid. You know, it seems like in the modern world, parents especially, are just terrified. If they take their eyes off their kids for 1 second, something terrible is going to happen. Well, in neighborhoods like this where everybody knows everybody, they don't have to be afraid. And that's really a great way to grow up.
I know of a group that one of my daughters belongs to, or used to belong to, where the people that started it originally did it because they found their family eating in separate spots, and they wanted the children to learn how to sit at a table with a place setting and eat and socialize.
Exactly.
Where did you find your stories? How did you go out there? I mean,
that's the magic of Google. Yeah. In fact, there are 30 groups in the book, but I found more than 30.
Did they start kind of like snowballing once you started finding
a little bit? It happened several times that people would participate in a group in where they lived, and then they would move to another town or another state and start their own group. So I kind of got referrals that way. But mostly I just found people, a number of these people have food blogs, and they would post something on their blog about their soup night. And when you put in that as the key word, I found all these things. I actually found more than 30, but I was not always successful in finding a good time to interview them. But I know there's more. I know there's more that I didn't find.
One of my favorites is also in my younger daughter's neighborhood, where they do a community-wide soup. They don't call it soup night. They call it the 100-mile potluck.
Oh, how wonderful.
And everyone brings something that was where the ingredients come from within 100 miles of their potluck. And it's amazing. In the summer, they hold it in a park so that it's not any one person's house that's inviting the whole community. Mm. But sometimes there's a lot of people there, and other times it's quiet.
That's fantastic. I spent some time in the East Coast earlier this year doing promotion on the book, and somebody told me about a potluck that she has in her neighborhood in Brooklyn, New York, where everybody on the block is invited to bring a dish that represents their native homeland. And I said, man, I want to come to that. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
That would be so much fun. Now, we are going to have to take just a breather from our interview with Maggie Stuckey so that we can invite in Jenka, and I think Sam is out with her, to talk more about how you can become a member of KBOO and how you can give us some money. But I want to just mention once again, I know Jenka mentioned it, how this is live radio, and I think that's something that we do at KBOO more so than any of the other stations here in town, is we invite guests to come in and talk with us right here, right now. Sometimes we record an interview and we edit out the rough spots and we play it back, but we are great at live radio. And another thing that I do as a KBOO volunteer is to set up and mix for live music. When you hear live music on KBOO, it's most often live at the time you're hearing it. And behind that music, there are usually at least two and often three or four volunteers setting up mic stands and plugging in all the connections. And right here at this table, we have four volunteers. And there's a volunteer in the air room. Tammy is our volunteer board operator. And out in Pledge Central, there are, how many volunteers there are at that table?
There's four volunteers waiting right now for your call. And if you call right now, actually, we've got just two copies of Soup Night by Maggie Stuckey. It's full of all kinds of recipes, a practical guide to starting your own soup night group, along with 99 delicious soup recipes and 40 recipes for accompaniments. This is like a soup revolution out there where people are bringing their communities together through soup nights. $60 minimum pledge will get you that. 877-500-5266. You know, these next 20 minutes are your last chance during this winter membership drive to show your support for KBOO's news, talk, interviews, public affairs programming. Do show your support right now. You may have been holding out. Now's the time to be a hero. 877-500-5266. And get the book, $60 minimum pledge.
You know, Jim put on his cape and he swooped in to renew his membership from right here in Portland. Thank you, Jim. Welcome back. And I don't know if Jim got it, but there is one of the soup books is already swooped up.
Left.
So there's only one. Don't sleep on this, folks. Throw on your bat cowl, whatever it is that you wear when you're a hero. 877-500-5266. Be a hero for your community. Do it online. KBOO.FM. How you do it is not nearly as important as the fact that you do it. Join in with Gravy at 3957 North Mississippi and Pasta Works at 3735 Southeast Hawthorne. They are some of our community heroes keeping the volunteers fed and ready to take your call at 877-500-5266.
Yeah, and then once you're a hero for KBOO, if you get this soup night, you can be a hero in your neighborhood and help put together this soup night on a regular basis, bringing together neighbors where the host provides the soup and the guests bring their own dishes and silverware, a salad and some bread. Neighbors get to know each other. People of all ages connect and socialize. The neighborhood becomes friendlier and safer. That is yours for a $60 contribution to KBOO, but only the next person that calls at that level will be able to pick up that book. 877-500-5266.
And that, my friends, is what KBOO is all about, bringing the neighborhood together, bringing neighbors together so everyone can hear from everyone else. That's what you're supporting when you call 877-500-5266. Let's hear some more right now.
Yes, let's hear more. We have Maggie Stuckey in the studio, and she has written that book, that cookbook, Soup Night, Creating Community Around a Pot of Soup.
So, Maggie, do you have any tips for cooking for a large group of people? A lot of us aren't really prepared. Usually we cook for four or five, but with soup night, we'd be preparing for a lot of people.
You would. first of all, don't worry about it. Several people said to me, we never know how many people are going to come. We make the soup. Somehow there's always enough. That's part of the magic of it all. But all of the recipes in the book are actually quantified for serving six people because I thought people would want to use it at home. In almost all cases, it's quite easy to expand them. And each recipe down at the bottom is in part of the notes. It says what you would need to do to expand it. Also, by the way, what you'd need to do to convert it for vegetarians or what parts of the recipe you can do ahead. It's almost always true that soup tastes better the second day anyway. That's part of what makes the whole thing easy.
What happens when a group starts to kind of gel and people start to bring, well, someone shows up with a salad, someone shows up with something where you maybe need a plate and a fork instead of just a soup and a bowl, a bowl and a spoon?
Well, in most cases, it's just soup and bread. But then, because we all kind of live in a potluck world, a lot of people do bring those things. I think most people have learned to set off on a side counter a small stack of plates and forks. The soup night that I write about that carries through the whole book has hit upon this wonderful strategy so that the person who's the host doesn't have this huge pile of dirty dishes at the end. You are required, this is one of the few rules, you're required to bring your own bowl and spoon. So you take it home with you. And so if a person brought a salad and they had reason to wonder that maybe there wouldn't be plates available, they might bring a stack of good paper plates or something. Mm-hmm. It's fairly easy to manage that part of it.
Yeah. I had another question I got sidetracked on, but before I ask that, I guess I'll ask you to tell us if there's something that's been on your mind that you wanted to talk about today.
Well, the most thing that I would like people to believe is that this is not a huge, major undertaking. A lot of people start small. They invite six or eight households, and then if that goes well, they might expand it to the whole block. The thing that makes that almost guarantees success when you're starting out from zero is to make a personal in-person invitation to the people you want to come, but so that they know who you are and that it's genuine and this is not some kind of weird scam. You know, this is really a real thing. And a lot of times if it's a neighborhood or a large block, you don't know everybody, but maybe one of your neighbors knows the people you don't know, so the two of you go as a team. And so whoever answers the door is going to see a familiar face. So that's one real key thing, is to introduce yourself in person. And another key thing is to make it as easy as possible. Don't require people to RSVP. Don't require them to bring anything, except maybe their empty bowl. And have it always be on the same night, like the final Sunday, for instance, and at the same time. And let people know it's okay to come late if they have to and leave early if they have to. Make it as easy as possible on everybody else and on yourself.
Now, I'm remembering now what I wanted to mention. I wanted to mention that it seems like that maybe in former generations there were more community dinners. Yeah. Is that true? Did you find that when you were doing your research?
Yes, because I think that's the source of the comment that I heard over and over again. And it goes like this. Having soup night in our neighborhood feels like the way the world used to be. One fellow said to me, it used to be that we could run out the front door in the morning and play with our pals all day long and just come home for supper and nobody would worry. We do that same here on our block because we know that the kids are safe. So in a way, having the soup night, it makes your community a small town. That's one thing. And it makes your community go backwards to an earlier time when these kinds of get-togethers were the way we lived, the way we socialized, the way we got to know our neighbors.
Well, it's so...
You know, I got one.
Okay.
So, okay, good.
You sort of alluded to this when she asked that question.
Yeah.
So you But how important is it to form that partnership with another neighbor when you're first forming it, going out to find your soup?
It helps. It's not essential, but it definitely helps. Mm-hmm. A lot of people make up just a little flyer. It sort of explains the idea, and make your address in big type and the time and the date in big type. Mm-hmm. Leave the flyer there if nobody's home, but then come back a second time. Make every effort, in the beginning, make every effort to introduce yourself in person. And having another person with you, first of all, it's just more fun if you're walking down a long block. But that second person would you multiply your efforts.
Yeah, and you can add them to the rotation, so you wouldn't have to have soup night at the same person's house every time.
Right, right, right. Some of the people in the book is always the same host, but the more common thing is that people take turns being the host.
Well, Maggie, we do have to end our little interview here, but thank you so much for being on KBOO today.
Thank you for inviting me. This was fun.
Yeah, well, write another book. I know you have another book.
Yes.
Tell us the title.
Well, I've written several. One you might be thinking of is called The Bountiful Container, which is about growing a vegetable garden in containers.
Very nice. And do we still have Maggie Stuckey's book available for a $60 pledge here
today?
We
have one copy left. Copy for a $60
pledge.
Now,
and just so that everybody knows, one of the copies that we have available is one that I have been reading, and Maggie Stuckey is going to sign it.
So get your signed copy of Soup Night by Maggie Stuckey for a $60 minimum pledge to support KBOO Community Radio. This is your last chance to support public affairs programming on KBOO in the next 11 minutes. During this membership drive, people have really come through for us. We're more than 90% of the way to our goal of $94,000. And in the next 20 minutes, this is your last chance to support the public affairs programming, the hard-hitting news, the food show, and other cultural connections that KBOO provides on a daily basis. Support this type of programming by dialing right now, 877-500-5266. I want to thank Rosamund from Portland, who gave online at kbo.fm.
Rosamund.
Yes. No other station serves the community more faithfully than you do. I love all of what you do. Thank you for all of your efforts. Rosamund picked up the Chinook book, which you can get as well for a $90 contribution full of coupons to all kinds of local businesses in the Portland area. And that could be yours as your thank you for contributing to KBOO. And again, this is the last chance to support KBOO. If you've been holding out, you've been waiting and saying, oh, I just want to be that hero on the last minute, now is the last minute. 877-500-5266.
I know a few of you haven't been deliberately waiting to be the last minute hero. You've just been putting it off. And now's the time to put it on. Put it on right now. 877-500-5266. 5266. Put on some of the dollars that pay the bills that we incur here at KBOO in bringing you 168 hours a week of top-notch quality radio, locally grown, handcrafted radio with the global reach on KBOO.FM. I want to call on some of our really far-out listeners. We've heard from Indiana, we've heard from Texas, we've heard from France. Now it's time
Someone called from Brooklyn. I remember getting that call.
There we go. Now it's time to hear from you. Wherever you are, call 877-500-5266. That may not work for our French and Pakistani listeners. You can use the website, the same one you use to listen. Click where it says donate today, because that really is when we need to hear from you, dear listener. KBOO.FM in the continental United States, and I think all through North America. 877-500-5266. For our more centrally located listeners, why not come down to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, right between East Burnside and Southeast Ankeny, just like our new friend Curtis is doing right now. As we speak, Curtis is putting down the dollars. He is helping to support locally grown, handcrafted radio right now. He knows the importance of community media that serves the community, because it's the community that comes together. It belongs to all of us, and that means that it is our responsibility to support it and make sure that it remains viable and continues to thrive over the next 46 years. And that is you, dear listener. 877-500-5266. 5266.
You know, if you come right now, you can actually meet Maggie Stuckey, the author of Soup Night, and get her to sign the book that you pick up as a thank you gift for your $60 contribution and talk with her about Soup Nights and how to organize them in your community. 877-500-5266. If you're not able to come down, if you are able, 20 Southeast 8th. Come on down and say hello.
So, Janka, if I give $90 for the year, can I still get the book?
Of course. That's a minimum, $60 minimum pledge. That means you could give $500 and just ask for the book as your thank you. You could give $1,000 if that's something that's doable for you. Whatever amount you're able to give to help us reach our goal, that all comes together. We've only got 7 minutes left in this section. We've got about $300 to go, and it would be terrible after all of this great work that everyone's put in over the last week and a half, that all the people who've contributed, that this last public affairs show wouldn't make its goal. I think it will make its goal. I think we'll get, you know, two people giving $150, or maybe we could get six people calling right now and giving $50 each. 877-500-5266.
I'm going to flip the script on you a bit there, Jenkins, and I'm going to say it will be so wonderful when those people come through for KBOO, the way KBOO has consistently come through for you, dear listener, and they call 877-500-5266. Trace that in the dust on your dashboard if you have to, and then pull over to a safe place and get out your phone and call 877-500-5266. You're stuck at 12th and Division as the train rolls by. Use that time well. 877-500-5266. Use the website kboo.fm. I really like to point out how the IRS will deduct that from your taxable income, and you can kind of divert some of your wealth away from the war machine of U.S. imperialism and keep those dollars circulating usefully in a way that promotes peace and justice and community. 877-500-5266. We're about to transition back to Kate and the others.
Thank you so much.
We're going to follow it up with some great music with Nick Geffro and Jazz Lives. So make that support right now.
So we have a new... welcome back to the Food Show. We have a new voice on the Food Show, and she's going to do her first segment right now. We have Rachel in the studio with us, who is going to give us some food news.
All right. KBOO listeners, it's great to be here. In food news, this month, President Obama signed the Farm Bill, a vast document encompassing a range of food-related issues, including agriculture, subsidies, nutrition policy, international food aid, renewable energy, and a host of other subjects. Formerly known as the Agricultural Act of 2014, the bill passes through legislation every 5 years, determining how we will spend $1 trillion over the next 10 years. Approximately 75% of the funding goes towards SNAP, or the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. 15% is set aside for subsidies, and the rest goes towards other categories such as conservation programs, university research, and risk management for specialty crops. The bill made it through with difficulty, with rifts between Democrats and Republicans, especially regarding SNAP benefits. In the end, they decided to cut 1% of these benefits and also exclude college students and lottery winners from the program. One of the significant reforms to the bill is a new crop insurance program, which will increase options for farmers and require them to apply for subsidies rather than being handed out direct payments. The new projects in the bill include crop insurance for catfish and cotton, peanuts, and sugarcane. Overall, direct spending on conservation has been cut, but the bill does force farmers who want subsidies to follow a series of conservation practices. There was a push to undo policy requiring packaged meat to declare its country of origin, but the policy will remain in place. One provision that didn't make it into the farm bill was pushed by domestic olive oil producers, mostly in California. These producers were pushing for stricter labeling and testing laws on imported oils to increase sales of domestic olive oil sales. I found the lobbying efforts interesting. They brought olive oil to legislator to try to convince them to create measures to help increase domestic olive oil sales.
Well, that's about all the time we have for food news. Thank you for tuning in to KBOO's Food Show. I'm Peter Shove.
And we are on the third Wednesday of every month at 11 a.m. Tammy Dean is our board operator. Our theme song is written and performed by Eugene musician Brian QTN. And we want to thank our guests, Maggie Stuckey, Aaron Gupta, and Tammy Parr. I'm Kate Welch.
I'm Chris Siegel.
See you all next month.
Need some food in my belly. Need some drink for the dry in my throat. Need for the world to recognize it. Everybody's in the same holy boat.
Stay tuned for new news headlines and then Jazz Lives with Nick Geffro. This is KBOO Portland.
The right size or perfect, 'cause you can't turn a fast dollar that way. You know it ain't right to make people grow coffee when their families could be growing food. Working those lands for corporations don't do hungry people no good, 'cause people need food in their belly. Need some drink for the dying in their throat. Need for the world to recognize it. Everybody's in the same holy boat. People got to have food in their belly. Need some drink for the dry in their throat. A need for the world to recognize it. Everybody's in the same holy boat.
This is KBOO Headline News at Noon for Wednesday, February 19, 2014.
I'm Patrick Wilson.
And I'm Diane Erickson. There is a debate in the state legislature regarding which notable Oregonian should have a statue in the National Statuary Hall at the U.S. Capitol. Each state is allowed two statues, and Oregon met that quota in 1953 with the addition of Jason Lee and John McLaughlin. Lee was the first missionary to Oregon and the founder of Salem and Willamette University, and McLaughlin is known as the father of Oregon and was the first to govern the Oregon country. House Bill 4017 would direct the Oregonian Historical Society to raise money for a statue in memory of the late Mark Hatfield, which would replace the statue of Lee. The bill's lead sponsor, Republican Vic Gilliman of Silverton, said it isn't a competition between Hatfield and Lee, but that it's time for the state to send a message about bipartisanship to Washington by recognizing a lawmaker who strongly projected that image. Opponents argue Lee should stay because he represents an integral part of the state's history.
According to a recent study, 59% of students at Western Oregon University faced food insecurity in 2013. This insecurity results when there is an uncertainty about or a lack of access to safe and nutritional food. This raises questions about the general financial stability of our college students and the impact on their academic achievement. These findings are impacted by the fact that the university has a high concentration of first-generation college and Latino students. So these results may not be universally found at all colleges. Other studies have shown that food insecurity among college students is more common than among other groups. The Oregon study is the first of its kind in the U.S.
In national news, there are significantly more people of color in the nation's private prisons than in our public prisons, according to a study by University of California, Berkeley. Private prisons generally have higher levels of violence and recidivism and provide less sufficient medical care and educational support than comparable public facilities. The study compares the percentage of prisoners identified as Black or Latino in private and public prisons in 9 states. The study revealed that the rates for people of color were higher for private prisons in all 9 states. These findings bring into question private prison industry claims of cost efficiency. Private prisons have lower numbers of older prisoners because they often have contracts that exempt them from accepting more expensive prisoners, which also means prisoners of color.
New York State is introducing a college educational program for prisoners at 10 of its facilities to help reduce recidivism and the size of the prison population. The program offered will include both associate and bachelor's degrees. Governor Cuomo's administration estimates that the state spends $60,000 for each prisoner incarcerated, yet it would only cost $5,000 a year to provide a college education. While New York prison recidivism rate is 40%, six prisons offering a barred college degree have attained a 4% recidivism rate for prisoners in their programs since 1999. Cuomo says the state is currently imprisoning and isolating, but not evidently rehabilitating, and he would like that to change.
In international news, political unrest in Venezuela saw its fourth fatality when a student protester was struck by a vehicle on Monday. Many of the protesters are concerned about the conditions of the schools. An opposition legislator said the student was hit by a government supporter. Protests against the government of President Nicolas Maduro are continuing to spread following rallies in Caracas last week that resulted in three fatal shootings. These actions represent the biggest challenges against the president since his election. Security forces used water cannons and anti-riot gear to patrol the streets on Tuesday morning, prior to the marches planned by Maduro and supporters and opponents.
The leaders of Mexico, Canada, and the U.S. will meet today to discuss relaxing border controls for trusted travelers moving between the three countries. The meeting will mark the 20th anniversary of the North American Free Trade Agreement and will focus on creating additional commercial travel liberalization between these North American nations. A key element of the discussions is likely to be an agreement that will speed the movement of executives and other regular travelers. This would be accomplished by creating a uniform continent-wide screening system for pre-screening certain travelers. There are already several trusted travel programs within these nations that could form the foundation for this work.
This is Diane Erickson
and Patrick Wilson
with the KBOO News at Noon, provided by volunteers in our Southeast studio in Portland, Oregon. Tune in every night at 5 o'clock for more local, national, and international news. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM in Hood River and the Gorge, 104.3 FM in Philomath and Corvallis, and of course around the world at KBOO.FM. It's time for Jazz Lives, and this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Redirect Guide, committed to promoting progressive regional businesses based upon the values of sustainability, localism, and social justice. Complete business directory and resource guide at redirectguide.com.